Drunk on Comics, episode 162, brought to you by InkWhiskey.com. Who you gonna call?
And part of that's just the budget for doing special effects.
So you need to find some
superheroes that you can keep on the down low, like Daredevil.
Right.
Which is why that should win an Emmy or something, if it even can classify for that.
I think so. I think Netflix series.
That's TV.
Because I think Orange is the New Black gets nominated quite frequently.
That'd be awesome. Because they only ever get nominated for things like special effects.
Right.
So you know, I should get nominated for an award.
What?
Burger Bash. The best burgers you could ever imagine making.
Yeah? Did you guys have some tasty burgers?
We did have some. It was very delicious.
Good.
I particularly liked the fact that there was venison burgers.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
And the cherry chipotle jam, you can't dismiss that.
I did not try any of that.
Have you ever had a peanut butter and jelly burger?
Yes.
Yeah. This can be really good. But you
it's pretty much just a burger thrown in peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah, it's because you're too lazy to come up with. You're out of ketchup and mustard, and you're like, hey, you know what sounds good?
Does sound a bit good. So,
sweet and savory.
So we're drunk on comics.
But we're usually eating food half the time, too.
Yeah.
You have to.
Gourmet.
You can't make the drunk last if you don't eat food.
I'm pretty much fine that you can't make life last if you're not eating food.
Drink responsibly.
I think in order of things we do, it's breathe. And then drink, although it's usually water or some kind of other beverage. And then food. I think that comes third on the list. So, like most of you. And then comic book consumption, because we've got to have that.
That's fourth.
Otherwise, it's just life's not worth living for.
One of the four main tenets of life.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Buddha included them in the Noble Eightfold Path someplace. And thou shalt watch pictured stories.
Moses came down up from on high with two tablets and a pocket full of comic books.
You know what? That would have been super useful for the illiterate
people. The Ten Commandments probably would have been way more interesting if they were
in comic book form.
Yeah.
I now kind of want to see someone make that.
Someone's going to make that now.
It's still got to be on stone tablets.
Hey, well, I was going to say, we don't know because those original ones got crushed together, so maybe he got a really bad editorial review about it. He's like, we got to reboot the whole thing.
Guy goes, gonna reboot, gonna come back down there again.
A few thousand years later, we're just gonna have to do this again.
I'm gonna beat Superman to it, I'm gonna die and come back to life.
Yeah, Superman's such a copycat. Savior of humanity.
Oh, anyways, no.
good time mixing religion with comics.
Always. Always.
So I'm Matt.
Linz.
And I'm Tony.
And we're here to talk about some comics. Some of them that came out this week, and some of them that have been around for a while, but you might not have heard about. So,
I will get started and talk about Ghostbusters Get Real number 2, written by Eric Burnham, art by Dan Schoening, colors by Luis Delgado. And this...
Spoiler alert for our off-the-shelf section. We might... spoil some of these books, so if you are interested in reading them, you can hit pause or just keep listening to a podcast
that reviews books.
Yeah,
of course we're going to be spoiling shit before they get to it. That's why I don't understand why we always need to say spoiler alert. Like, if you didn't know this, you shouldn't be listening to podcasts that are talking about the subject matter that you may or may not.
That's
have
true.
Got
it's
to.
It's just a courtesy.
It's more about discussion.
We should probably warn people that we're going to butcher artists' names and writers' names.
That's fair.
We apologize for that in advance.
Yeah, that's the only true rule that we try to stick to because it happens too much.
We just don't read those letters too good.
That's why we need books with pictures.
It's English language. It's not phonetic.
Now, this book has a lot of things going for it, which I thoroughly enjoy. And then one caveat that I can get to. first off, we've already seen the Ghostbusters book have a crossover a couple months ago when Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles went over there, and that was because of another primordial, you know, huge god that kind of made a, you know, dimensional, brought the turtles over from their New York to Ghostbusters New York. Now, within that book, it was very interesting and strange how they would react, and the Ghostbusters see these giant walking around turtles, they're thinking they're demons. Now,
as you do.
Yeah, and then they're fighting, but then they're realizing it's this giant other god that came out, and they're going to have to capture it, and ultimately that all got resolved, and Donatello had to create a, with Venkman's help, a portal back to their New York. So you have that established, that they did this.
And it was nice that in those comics that it actually became like canon, where they referenced it. About, like, yeah, remember those events that happened a couple months ago?
Yeah.
It wasn't just a special crossover issues. They're part of the mainstream.
Yeah, I do remember that, because that was my next train of thought. Thank you. I'm sorry. So, within book number one of this, you have... Now, this is where you have to also understand within the comic book form and what's going on with these Ghostbusters. There's the Ghostbusters comic and how they are drawn and how those people interact, and they've have their own personalities. There's still Venkman, Winston... and Egon and
Ray.
But it's a little bit different from what I grew up on watching the real Ghostbusters, the TV show cartoon. Also different from the movies as well. Wherein those Ghostbusters, they're drawn actually really like how the old show was. So that's kind of cool to distinguish between which...
To identify. Yeah.
The other thing is... within the show, Slimer had became a friendly ghost, hung around the fire station, went on their adventures and whatever. Where in the Ghostbusters, this comic book world, Slimer's maybe less evil than them, but not like their friend. But they keep them in a containment unit separate from, you know, the other containment units, to where you see him, but you don't want to let him out because he's an... whatever, mischievous, evil, not the cool, friendly one. And that's the first fuck-up that these Ghostbusters did, the real Ghostbusters did, is when they saw him in there. Oh, Slimer, why are you in there? And released him, and then all hell wrecked loose in the firehouse. Now, like I said, that was in book one. So, to kind of get what's going on, though, the Egon of comic book Ghostbusters world, he's the one that establishes, they must be from a different dimension. We've already had, you know... this happened before, so there's a little less of the whole, wow, what's going on, this and that. They kind of got to, like, scientific terms, we now understand this has been established, we don't need to waste so many pages of it, let's get on to the story.
Yeah.
So that's what's been great about this, but watching Venkman in particular hate his other self, or hate all these other people, comic book one, and then, you know, Venkman from the real Ghostbusters kind of getting all snooty. Also, in the beginning of these books, it's kind of like the old cartoon show where the ghost with the cross, like, you know, the circle and the cross, like, you know, the symbol.
Tells the brand logo?
Yeah. Telling the viewers how the episode is going to be. So it almost reads as if it was an old cartoon episode of The Real Ghostbusters. All this has to do with the writing and, well, I guess a bit of the art and how it's drawn. And that's kind of where I'm going to... say my one thing, a reason why I haven't really read the Ghostbusters is the art is just a little unsettling for me. Mainly the mouths. They look like it's like a sideways duck face.
Yeah, it's like I've been punching the jaw one too many times.
Yeah, like Stallone wrote this or something. And I'm okay with, like, you know, your own interpretations and everything, but I particularly enjoy the real Ghostbusters look. And what's been great about this is you have their look being within these cartoony versions of themselves. So, A, like we said, they stick out. But, two, I can only imagine in a world where if there's real cartoons sitting around here with us that were our versions, we would be able to tell a difference and being like, this is so weird looking because I know you're me, but...
like in a Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yeah.
Yeah, feel?
Because, I mean, that's what these people have. Obviously, they're cartoons all in all, but just to even see that. And there's even a point where Venkman says, hey, you know, we need blonde blonde Egon here, and because Ginger Ray is going getting like confused again, which is also great because it shows Ray being the one that always gets hypnotized and confused in all of his alterations of all these worlds. The one thing that I wanted to do, this stuck a lot more with having to do with the comic book and with how what was I going to say? My next thing. Oh, yeah. With the comic book and the real Ghostbusters, but it has less to do with the primordial god that they were looking for until he's searching these worlds. And they show kind of like a double spread page where he's going to this world and that world. He sees other Ghostbuster groups, but it's not the Ghostbusters in particular that he's looking for. He's looking for the main prime set of Ghostbusters that he's now ticked off about because they're somehow going to, the prophecy stated that they're going to unravel his world. So getting to that, when he's going through the many different worlds, two in particular that it showed, well, actually, is when he sent his hound, you see like an 8-bit group, you see like a cartoony version, bobblehead versions of them, like, because these are all things that could happen in multiple different dimensions. When you start talking about the possibilities are always endless. But what I liked in particular is they got the Ghostbusters. And this goes on to why the Ghostbusters are the real Ghostbusters, is because...
Entitled, because there was an original show.
There was an original show called Ghostbusters that then they made a bunch. It was like an old knockoff Hanna-Barbera type looking where there was a giant gorilla.
Yeah, they had a pet monkey.
There was like a dude that always wore like the Launchpad McQuack like hat, goggles, you know, helicopter pilot person. And then like a blonde-haired dude. And then I think there was like also a friendly ghost or something. I can't remember. But they rode around in a dune buggy. And it was one of those like they always fought the same bad guy type, you know, thing, and their people are sent out because they were Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters couldn't be Ghostbusters. They had to be the real Ghostbusters, as in off the movie version Ghostbusters,
which just makes them feel like they're fake Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Yeah,
if
it's
you
like having
specify
the
specify that you're real,
having the Twitter handle of the real Drunk on Comics would make us sound like we were not actually.
That's what the cartoon versions have to do. Right. So to see like just a picture, you know, of that was kind of like awesome. They kind of even included that for the nerdy person that knows this knowledge that I just laid on you.
Do any of those other dimensions have the female Ghostbusters?
They didn't. Not from what they're kind of showing.
I was hoping that
they
have
one or two where they had a female Ghostbuster, but not when there's one that looked like it was Hulk Hogan. But then one other Easter egg for those that watched the old show. And Venkman even asked the cartoon Ghostbusters, so have you guys ever had to go up against this, going up against Cthulhu, ever got transported into the containment unit? And their Venkman, and I mean, I hope this is all like trying to make sense, but trying to explain it doesn't. They were saying, no, that's, or Egon says, no, that's impossible. Well, we know from the cartoon show, they've gone into the containment unit a couple of times. While being in the containment unit, they are the ghosts, a.k.a. real people, and there is the ghost versions of them. And just seeing a picture of that, too, brought me back to childhood and saying, aw. I could go on and on about how this crossover is really a good one for talking to yourself that's different but enough like it. You know, Winston pretty much trying to be the peacemaker throughout the whole thing. Venkman starting all the shit. And both Egon's just pretty much trying to figure out how to do this.
Nerd out while Ray like is just staring at each other playing that like mirror game.
Yeah. Well, one Venkman said, you know, can I punch this one or would that break the universe? And both Egons go, no.
No.
Like, go for it. So, all in all, very fun book. It's a good series. If you didn't read the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you don't need to. They mention just, you know, Donnie and a couple having a adventure with them. But, yeah, brings me back to childhood, so.
Yay, Ghostbusters.
Right on.
Who are you going to call?
He-Man.
All right, Linz, what are you going to review this week?
Oh, this week I got The Shrinking Man from IDW, based on the original Richard Matheson novel from the 50s. It's a story about Scott Carey, who gets... He's on a boat. Well, in this... I've never read the book, so I'm going to assume that this is pretty close to what the book is, but he's on vacation. He gets some sort of mist surrounds him, and it's like a insecticide or something, and it has this effect on him where he starts shrinking. And he first knows it.
Usually it's just cold water that makes it happen. But
well, he's on a boat.
Yeah.
So he notices that he's losing weight, and he thinks that maybe he's just sick. But then he starts shrinking height-wise, which when you're a grown man is not generally something that happens, right? So this book hops back and forth between when he is like 5/7 of an inch tall and when he's going through the initial process of shrinking.
Now, I ask this like kind of serious, like, is, do you see, or when you're looking at this, like, do comparisons of Ant-Man?
No.
Totally different, totally it's, not it's funny?
It's not like funny at all, no.
Okay.
There's no humor in this book. I mean, when he is at his small size, and he's, like, one of the big things in the book, from what I understand, is at the end, he has this epic battle with, like, a Black Widow spider, and they kind of go into that in the comic book. So it kind of gives you that feel, like an Ant-Man type thing, where he's small, he's battling an insect, but he doesn't have, like, superhuman strength or anything like that. He's just a very small person. Very small.
So does it seem like he's going to shrink, like, smaller and smaller to, like, Adam size?
That is, he, at the beginning, he just assumes that once he gets, because he's shrinking 1/7 of an inch a day. So where this book starts, he's at 5/7 of an inch, so he thinks he only has 5 days left to live. Okay. And then once he hits that last day, he's just not going to exist anymore. He's going to be dead. From what I understand, the book is more, it gets into more like of an existential, like he doesn't actually die, he just keeps shrinking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think the book gets into that, and I think this will probably get into it too, because, I mean, he's already 5/7 of an inch, and it's issue one. So you can't really have a series where you go in the fifth issue and he's just dead. That would be a horrible comic to read.
Well, you could if it was a five-issue miniseries. Yeah.
Well, next time he gets onto a speck of dust and this elephant picks him up and he's like, we are here, we are here, we are here. Oh, I'm sorry, I stole that storyline.
All right. So my favorite part of this book is the art, which was done by Mark Torres. So he's very good at when they're hopping back and forth between, like, when he first starts shrinking. It shows, like, without saying it outright that he's getting smaller, you can see it. And it's subtle. So, like, in the first couple pages, like, his clothes are just kind of big on him, you know? And then further on, he's sitting next to his wife, and he looks like a he's like child size, and his wife looks huge. And it gets into their relationship and how she feels weird around him now. Like, he tries to kiss her on the neck, and it freaks her out because he's so small.
But, like, okay, let's go back a second.
Okay.
Like, so he's fighting this Black Widow at the end. How did he get so small that he was, like, not taken care of? Like, you would think that once he got, like, in the palm of someone's hand, there'd be, like, researchers or, like, other people say the cat could get him now.
Right. I have no idea. They haven't gotten into this yet, that yet. So, with the back and forth, it goes, you know, he goes to the hospital or he goes to doctors and they're worried about the money and all the tests and stuff, and then the doctors decide they're going to do it for free because he's an anomaly. You know, they want to run all kinds of tests on him.
They just want to write some papers about
it. Pretty
him.
Much, yeah. But in that storyline, like in the initial one, it only gets to the point where he's just kind of, he's smaller. He's probably about the size of like a 12-year-old. And it's into his issues with his wife and their relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's where that storyline ends, and then the one where he's 5/7 of an inch, it's him trying to, he meets the Black Widow, he knows that this is going to be an issue, he's trying to be dominant over it, but it's a Black Widow, you can't really, there's no like conflict between them yet. It's just kind of introducing that there's going to be, but it's more so him trying to get up to the top of a refrigerator to get food because there's like a box of old crackers or something up there. He's in a basement. I'm assuming it's of his house.
So when I'm sleeping in like a dollhouse and like having like plexiglass over it, so that no, like I've seen Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, like freaking scorpions just chilling in your backyard. I know that happens every day.
Yeah.
So having that random black widow in this person's house, I mean, because how normal that is.
Well, if you live in the South or, or warmer climates.
Actually, what, who am I kidding? I don't care if I see any spider. I think it's a black widow in their head. But.
So because it's jumping back and forth, some of these questions might get answered later on.
Yeah, I think so. So, you know, the obviously I think the back and forth is something they're going to keep doing because you want to find out how he got where he, why he is in the basement, why isn't there anybody taking care of him? His wife obviously must have left at some point, you know. Did he just remove himself so he wouldn't be a burden to anyone? I don't know. It'll probably go into it. If you've read the book, you might know the answers to these, and I haven't. So, but it's just the, like I said, the art is really good at showing you what's going on without hitting you in the face with it. And it gives you, the story gives you this feeling of tragedy that you can kind of connect with, even though we're not, you know, we're not shrinking. I'm not shrinking.
So, according to my math, he was 5'7" at the start?
He was 72 inches tall.
Okay, 72 inches. Yep. And at a seventh of an inch a day means he's every week he's dropping another inch. So he's got 504 days or so that he's been shrinking. So that's a lot of story time.
It is a lot of story. Yeah.
Interesting.
So,
with you, though, that the creators didn't really do the math and think maybe it is a week? Because I don't see a span of, like, them telling...
Well, they
504 days, you said?
It would be 504 days is...
Okay.
Would be until he gets to zero.
Yeah.
So he'd be at day, you know, he's got...
At least over a year. You'd think over a year, enough people seeing this. Like I said, the scientists, whatever, unless he's in hiding from them, someone, a son, a brother, someone would be like, hey, not the whole world getting out to be like...
Little baby man, we must take care of you.
Right, right. Well, and that kind of goes into the issue of, like, when a lot of times when people have something wrong with them, they remove themselves from because they think that they're a burden.
Yeah.
So that could be what happened
in
this book.
That's where I feel like comic book characters in comic books never have read comic books. Because, see, if I start drinking, I'd be going to my brother and be like, hey, something's wrong with me. Yes.
Eventually, you could ride along on my mustache.
Aw, that would be so cute.
Make you a little tiny harness.
But no, this book is really good. If you like kind of like that old school science fiction, you know, that's what it plays to. You know, if I want to see what happens. I want to see why there isn't anybody taking care of him. I want to see what happens when he hits zero, you know? So I said the artist, but this was adapted in writing by Ted Adams. The colors were Tommy Varga. So it's beautifully written, beautifully drawn. I can't wait to see what's next. I'm not going to spoil it for myself by reading the book, even though I'm really interested in what happens.
See, books, they just don't have enough pictures in them.
It's true,
days. Yes.
There is a movie,
is there a movie,
too. Yes, The Incredible Shrinking Man.
Easy to go see the movie.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, for sure. But I don't want to spoil it.
Well, speaking of things that are books, and also, I guess, TV shows, which kind of are like movies and stuff, I'm going to review... something that it's not new off the shelf this week, but it has been brought to my attention as new. Didn't know that these existed. The Hedge Knight and the Sworn Sword. Got them in graphic novel form here from Jet City Comics, which found out is like a subsidiary of Amazon.com.
Okay.
It is George R. R. Martin, and this is a prequel for the Game of Thrones.
And this is also a reason why fans of the book say... stop writing other shit. Get back to the books. Although these were great, but...
Yeah. So, it takes place about 100 years before the events of the Game of Thrones, the story of Song and Ice, or the Song of Ice and Fire, whatever. I'm probably butchering it, and somebody is now very angry. But George R. R. Martin did write the story, but then it was adapted for comic books, because, you know, comic book writing is different than... you know, novels, by Ben Avery. Pencils by Mike S. Miller and colors by Mike Crowell. And gosh, they are just, also we got more colors by Team Candaro for digital ones. art is it's first rate. They both those teams worked on both of these graphic novels, and apparently there's supposed to be a third one that's going to come out to kind of complete this trilogy. The Hedge Knight is about a hedge knight, which, if you're not familiar with the term, essentially is somebody who has been knighted. They are sworn to uphold justice and peace, but they don't have a single lord that they have given their fealty to.
Okay.
So they travel around, and from time to time, will go to a king or a lord or any other powerful person who has money. They're kind of like mercenaries.
Yeah.
But they, the true hedge knight, and they bring us up in the book, is a hedge knight gets to be truer to the values of being a knight because they get to choose whose cause that they fight for. And so if they really don't like the king and they think they're that lord and he's a real douchebag, then they can say, I'm not going to fight for you. And so the hedge knight was the squire of this old hedge knight, just this nice old guy type deal. And when he dies, he takes his shield and armor and says, hey, I'm a knight now.
Okay, and so he wasn't actually knighted?
He says that his master knighted him. But they never actually show that.
Can knights make other knights?
Yes, they can. In this world, they can.
Okay.
Usually, it's the king or the lord that's supposed to do it.
Yeah, but there's so many different ones, and it's even in the books too, though.
Yeah.
When you're knighted, yeah, this place they can officially make you a knight now. What you're a knight of, or whatever, it just means that you can if you have that parchment or say who knighted you.
Yeah.
They'll research, they'll do whatever. There's other people that can say they're knights, and then when they find out not, then it's off with their head or whatever. But here, because there's so much fucking infighting anyways, who knows who the new king is at the keep?
Yeah. And historically, knights were usually sworn to a lord.
Right.
And that's how they were knights, and so you really didn't have hedge knights in, Europe. During the medieval ages and stuff. Right. So this is in their fantasy world.
Fantasy,
you
right.
can have this. So the first thing he's like is, man, this is my chance. I'm going to go to a tournament, and all I have to do is win a couple rounds in jousting, and I will get the armor and the horses or the other people, which then I can sell, and I'll have some more money, and I'll prove that I'm a knight, and then I can start questing as a knight and offering my services as a knight. Until this point, he was just a squire of this hedge knight that some people have heard of, but not everyone was. He wasn't super famous or anything. Along the way, he gets a young squire by the name of Egg, and they get into some shenanigans. Don't want to spoil too much about it, but not everyone is who they say they are. And you do get that element of Game of Thrones where politics are really important. When you strike a prince of the realm, that prince is very angry and wants to see you dead. And also, trials are stupid, so let's just do trial by combat. Because That always works out. And they invoke the rule, the prince invokes the rule of trial by seven, which means that he actually has to find seven other knights or six other knights who will fight for him. Otherwise, if he can't even find them, then you were guilty. You couldn't find. You only have five friends.
Think it was just. Wasn't it either from the different realms too?
No, he just had to find six other knights that would fight for his cause. And the idea is that, well, if your cause is just, then you should find knights who will fight for you. So there's a whole lot of this they. At first tried to just get him for, striking the prince, and then he goes, I would pick the trial by combat. And then the prince is like, oh, well, he's kind of big and strong, so maybe he could win that combat. So since nobody knows him, if I invoke the trial of seven, then he doesn't have enough people who will fight for him and will just get him in that legal loophole. And then he ends up getting some people who
fight for him. Wasn't he just going to have his arm chopped off, though, too?
Yeah, rather than killing him, they said, you'll probably lose your arm, and you also kicked him, so you'll probably lose your foot, too.
Mm.
And he's kind of like, no.
That's what I thought. Yeah, the dude was being a dick.
Oh, yeah, but that's what the Targaryen princes were supposed to be like.
So. Oh, it was Targaryen?
So this is back 100 years before when the Targaryens are still ruling. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting.
Again, don't want to, go into it. It's greatly detailed, so there's plenty of story there.
You need to read the show to understand that it's really good. It's an additional, some back lore.
It doesn't even tie in too much with the show. Okay. There's a little bit. There's at least one character that you're like, oh, that's that person in their youth because
they would be really old. Does it give you more insight into the show?
A little bit in the sense of what are all the other people doing? See, in the show or in the book, it's all about who's going to sit on the throne. This is about the high politics. This is about like the serious stuff, and everyone's trying to murder everyone. It was actually kind of nice to just have a nice person
right.
just try to do what's right in the world and not have to worry about everyone who's he's grasping for power above his station. He's like, no, I just want to be a knight.
Right.
I'm cool with that. I'm humble with that.
Okay.
And so you get a different type of story in the world of Westeros, which, so if you like Game of Thrones, it's a good thing. And if you don't, if you just like medieval, knights riding horses, jousting tournaments and stuff, it does a really nice job of doing that. Clearly, it's fiction, so not everything's going to be historically accurate.
Right.
But from my experience,
from my history books, I remember dragons and stuff. So.
from my knowledge as a medieval, weaponry and warfare is kind of one of my fortes in history. I'll say that a lot of this does come from history and stuff. George R. R. Martin certainly has done his research, and it's familiar enough with the real world that you could enjoy it. I wouldn't obviously quote this in a history paper, but I would certainly go, oh, that's kind of cool. Yeah. I didn't know that they had different rules for jousting. And, I mean, that's the thing is all those tournaments, everyone's like, oh, jousting was all there was. Actually, there was a ton of events that knights would compete in, and tournaments took lots of different forms, and they briefly cover that. But
nice.
That's not the point of the story. The point of the story is you got this hedge knight, and it's really good.
Every time you say hedge knight, I just think of Sonic the Hedgehog in armor.
That would be really cool, be all spiky and stuff. The other thing I want to say is in the second one, there's this drought going on, and what I really wanted to applaud the artists for, and I definitely think it comes in the coloring, because I don't see many pencil lines outlining it, but some of the characters are so sweaty, and you can see the sweat beads rolling down their face, and it's very subtle. You actually have to look at the pictures, but you can see it, and then including pit stains in their shirts.
Oh wow.
Like reading it, I'm just like, I'm feeling really freaking warm. I'm glad I'm in air conditioning, but man, this book is making me feel hot. So kudos there on the art and the colors, and go pick up the Hedge Knight and the Sworn Sword. You can find them on Amazon. Do an internet search and you'll find them, but they're good books. You won't be disappointed.
Very cool.
All right. Well, some people may or may not be disappointed, but they could be happy to find out that Channing Tatum is still on Gambit.
He is?
He is still on Gambit.
Yes.
He is. Then what was the rumor that he wasn't?
The rumor that he wasn't was a rumor that he wasn't. I mean,
okay.
Simple as that.
But there was no explanation as to why that rumor got started or...
No, it he really was in contention with them a bit, and there was talks of him leaving, but with most movies, when you talk about one person leaving, it makes one side have to talk, renegotiate, and ultimately, he's pretty much said, the movie's still going to go forward, I'm still here, but yeah.
Okay. He's a producer on that movie, too,
well,
I think.
That's one of the big reasons why that movie was going to be made, is because he... was the one that was really gunning for
right.
it. So to have him walk away also made a lot of people who've known, decision knew what was going on, kind of say, is this real?
Yeah.
Or is this just fantasy? Are we caught in a landslide? There's no escape from this reality. People just open their eyes.
Okay.
How long are we going to let this go on?
Up there, Superman, look up to the skies and see.
So, all right. Well, I guess we'll have to someday watch the Gambit movie.
I'll watch it. I love Gambit.
That's the thing. For me, that's why it's like, I was kind of happy, excited. I just don't see him as Gambit personally.
Yeah.
And I just think he's not slender enough. Like, I think you need to have just a scrawny, Cajun-sounding dude.
I agree. And they say, oh, he's from New Orleans. I go, just because you're from New Orleans doesn't mean that you've got the Cajun accent.
Right.
That
was my biggest problem with Gambit in the Wolverine movie. I mean, I had other problems with the Wolverine movie.
Yeah.
But Taylor Kitsch looked like
I liked
Gambit,
what he looked like.
But
he didn't
Gambit
sound like it.
Accent was
and then also,
zero.
Like, his kinetic energy makes things fly. That was kind of stupid, too. But then most things about the Wolverine Origins movie, I have tried to forget.
Yes,
which
for sure.
Got rid of. Other things that I can't forget about Wolverine is what his final movie's going to be like, and he wants to know what you want.
I think most people want him to do the full Monty. But
I'd be okay with that, I think. For sure.
I want to hear Snicket. And I want to hear him say bub.
Yes.
And
he said it.
Yeah, I know. So like, but I like though that he's, you know, Hugh Jackman's gone to Twitter now asking his fans, you know, what they like to see. As we've all speculated, it sounds like it's going to be Old Man Logan script.
No, I finally realized what I want to see.
What?
I want him to put his mask on. He's never had the mask on.
Did you see? Did you watch the Wolverine? Did you watch the Wolverine?
Yes.
Did you see the end, like the deleted scene, the alternate ending?
Where they show the...
She gives him the
suit,
the brown and gold.
No, I missed that
mask. So it's more like she's giving it to him in like a a traditional sense, but it's legit, like his original.
It looks cool, but he doesn't put it on.
Well, no. but okay.
He gets it. Yeah,
yeah. I was gonna say, because I'd love to see the brown, the suit and stuff.
Yeah,
maybe. No, here's what I want Hugh Jackman to do. I want him to wear an eye patch and be Patch. When Wolverine lost his memories and thought he was some crime boss named Patch in Madripoor.
Or just have it doing it and then making a Nick Fury joke. Yeah. Like, but no, I really think, though, this is cool because, like I said, although they have the script and everything, you could easily throw in a couple things or two.
Sure.
Like if it was the popping the claws or doing the middle finger with one and there's enough people that said, I just want you to do it. They haven't started production. You could easily throw that in.
Yeah.
We had a ton of fans say they want to see me put on the mask, which, if it wasn't in there,
they could easily do that. You could put the mask on and go like, nah.
That sucks. Nah.
Right. Yeah, so hop on Twitter. I think the hashtag is one last time. He wants it 50 words or less. He says he's going to try and read all of them.
Hugh Jackman's a class act.
He is.
I really like him. So.
Yep.
And that's why, like, at first when he was Wolverine, I'm like, man, you're too tall for the part. You know, I really want the short, scrawny runt. And then he kept beefing up. And I go, okay, proportionately, you're getting better. But it's everything
he's
else.
He's younger throughout the movies.
Yeah. But it's everything else that he's done in the meantime that, and just even like listening to him on interviews and stuff. And I'm just like, you're an actor I like. And so, you know what? Keep rocking Wolverine.
Right.
You're good at it.
Yeah, for sure.
What else?
Can't wait till this fantastic movie comes out.
Okay. Are you talking about Deadpool or like Suicide Squad
or the Fantastic Four movie that nobody has really seen yet? And it comes out in just a couple weeks, right?
Yeah, it comes out this week.
Oh, this week. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yep, and people have seen it. There's just an embargo on actually releasing any thoughts or reviews on it.
An embargo, if you're not familiar with it, basically means that if critics or somebody have seen the movie, they can't publish any reviews about it, which means there's going to be very little publicity going into it.
Is there a fine involved if they do?
Probably.
Because, you know, things get leaked all the time. What's stopping people from doing it?
Okay, so let's say you're a reporter, you go, guess what? You're never fucking coming to one of my shows or any of these other movies again. Are you going to suicide your career to be the first to post?
And for what? For basically probably giving a negative review, because I can't see any... If it was a good movie, they would want that publicity. Ant-Man did that because a lot of people had doubts, and Ant-Man, back in June, we were hearing about... People have seen it, and the critics are liking it.
Right.
They say it's funny, it's kind of got a Guardians of the Galaxy feel to it, which surprised people. So if it's positive publicity, you'd want that out there. So the only thing we can guess is that it's going to be just as shitty as The Thing looks. So
I mean, I apologize for my hate on this movie, but I just... Yeah, so this is just one more thing that seals the deal. Now, if I start seeing positive reviews, I'm going to be wanting to go to those theater places and getting the crystal meth or smoking before going in to see it, because...
I'll be hesitant until I've seen it myself. But, yeah, I feel nothing bad about its past history and particularly Fox and how they've handled that franchise, that they don't give me much confidence.
Right.
So we might poo-poo on it, but then maybe we have to change our mind later. So we'll see. Right. So
speaking of movies, we got Steve Trevor for Wonder Woman. Now Chris Pine, he's stepping up to be Steve Trevor. Makes me wonder if they're doing like the legit origin story of Wonder Woman, or if they're just going to throw him in there.
Oh, once again, like, I guess there hasn't ever really been a Wonder Woman movie, so I can slide on the okay, have an origin movie story, but it's once again when you have iconic people, Batman, Superman, the Trinity, if someone's going to this movie not knowing who Wonder Woman is, right. where she came from.
Well, no, but that's the difference, is people know who Wonder Woman is.
A lot of people don't know her origin yeah. story.
You I mean, ask that she's an Amazon, they'd be like, really? Like, she sells things on the computer?
She's from the jungle?
Yeah. Yeah. She's from South America, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. I think many people would probably, I didn't say many, I think non-comic book goers would be surprised to see how much she's tied into Greek mythology.
See, what I'd love to see is actually the first movie not, and then when the third and fourth movie comes out that are reboots of the origin story, yeah. we'll have the origin story then.
Yeah, but DC says there's going to be no more reboots, but I guess that just applies to their comics.
Yes.
Their head of Dan DiDio. Is that his name?
That's Didio. How I always say it. Didio.
Didio. I mean, maybe I'm a really Didio. Bad comic book podcaster Didio. That I've never, I don't think I've ever said his name out loud. Didio.
He's kind of a big deal in the comic he book is. World, too.
He's doing a good, they're doing good things over at DC. I hear a lot of positive things. We'll talk yeah. about Superman here in just a second. But he says that this is it for reboots. And the only thing that I can think of is, this is it for reboots under your command.
Right.
Like, you're not going to issue any more reboots yeah. and stuff like that. But 10 years from now, somebody else might have that position as editor-in-chief and
might decide to.
Yeah. Or Warner Brothers, your parent company might say, hey, we want to make movies again, and we're going to make you reboot it so we can make right. more money. So
they stick to it. Good on them.
Yep.
You know, I'm sick of restarting.
Starting over again. So, speaking of cool things happening in in DC Comics, Superman, as you've probably heard, has recently been depowered, and Lois Lane has outed him to the world.
That bitch.
And so, this is some of the more compelling Superman stories that we've had in a long time, because he's not the hey, I can just beat everything by looking at it and getting a suntan. He's very much kind of vulnerable. He's still strong and tough.
Right.
But
he's been cut off from his heritage.
Yep. And you got to actually deal with some like people issues here.
Right.
And it's nice. And one of the people issues and a hot topic going on too is police brutality. And so as these peaceful citizens are going to throw him a block party, you get the police kind of starting a riot. However you feel on the topic, you know, that's a different debate, but again, the fact that mainstream comics are including it is worth a shout out to them. So,
right.
So I'm actually saying this: kudos to Superman.
Yes. Well, there is only one Superman, but there is also can be only one.
Actually, that was awful like there, and great at the same.
Yeah,
I feel like there can be another one because I'm not too thrilled with the way that this is going down. But maybe you guys are. Highlander 3030 is a new comic book coming out, and as the title suggests, it's Highlander set in the year 3030.
Okay.
Matt's having an issue over there.
I'm having a conniption. First off, the preview art that we've seen in this and the review that we've read of it, the art looks pretty awful, and by the all accounts, the story is not that much better.
Well,
the thing that bugs me is just the principle of why are you putting it in 3030? That is so far in the future that all of our minds are probably on computers now. So do you become the Highlander by unplugging people's computers? You know, like you chopped off their head, you took their internet connection, they have no more head in cyberspace, and therefore, I mean, that is where...
Nor why do you need swords and stuff?
Yeah. Why aren't they using lightsabers? It's kind of like
the Highlander 2 that we all forget, but that was kind of futuristic.
Yeah, but that was only like 200 years or so into the future, or some other thing. I forget because it was that bad.
Not 1,000 years.
Yeah, 1,000 years now is... When you say something's like in the 3000s, you're talking about like past Star Trek type
right.
technology. You know, if we haven't assimilated with machines by that point, then you're doing your science fiction wrong for the year 3030. Now, if this was like 2030, I could see that because our technology, you know, 15 years from now, we will probably finally have our hover cars. So,
yeah.
But I personally don't like that it also, fine, do this. That's your concept. That's your thought. But it's officially licensed as the sequel to the films and the movies.
Yeah.
So it's, don't say it's official because What's going to happen is the next movie is that they're going to set not in that time.
So if it's the official sequel, who does it follow? Did you read that?
No.
Oh, I think it did say it follows Duncan MacLeod. Because they killed off Connor MacLeod in the movies.
And I've seen the Highlander Endgame, the last of all of them, which I think I told you about that. It was dumb. He got the power of, he could have a kid then.
Oh, well, that was the end of the first one. He became the one. The very first movie, he becomes the one, and now he's mortal again. And he wasn't. And then they had this stupid sequel where another of their alien has come down, and then automatically he became mortal. So that's why the second one was stupid, and we'll forget about it.
But the Duncan MacLeod universe had a lot more, you know, coming from the TV show. That was still a dumb payoff in the end. I was like, you should become the god of this world.
Did I ever tell you how they should reboot the series, the TV series?
Oh.
And any big producers who are out there, you can just have this idea. It's for you.
Time travel?
Nope. Free. You have one of the really powerful immortals that are left, because there isn't just one, but there's certainly some of these real powerful ones that have been thousands of years old, have got a lot of immortal souls that they've taken. He gets tired of life, he or she gets tired of life, and commits suicide by like a guillotine or something, cuts off their own head on holy ground. And so what that does is frees all those souls, and those souls go out and find new people. So instantly you have a new generation of potential immortals who kind of wake up going, I'm now immortal, but I'm a level one immortal. I haven't killed anyone. And then you'll have some of them who are going around killing folks,
right on,
trying to gain that power back. And
reminds me of the last season of Buffy the Vampire Slayer a little bit.
That's fine. Joss Whedon, you know, I know you're listening right now. You can have that one. Get that started.
That would be, go ahead, Joss. Yeah, go ahead.
I do like the Highlander universe, but that is a comic I am probably just going
to
pass on.
It's, the art, you know, I can't draw, so I'm not one to to knock anybody's art, but it is definitely, it looks like they're trying to play on that new, like, really dark, scratchy style that's popular lately.
I don't think that's the book to have dark, scratchy
style. It doesn't work.
All right, well, Ultimate Spin Podcast, which I don't know from the word name of it you might get or not get, is a podcast about Spider-Man. And recently
Ultimate Spin?
Yeah, Ultimate Spin
podcast. I thought
spinning,
it was...
like spinning web.
Oh, I thought it was people who just like spin around in circles until they vomit. That would be very dizzy.
And within the podcast, Robbie Rodriguez, who's working on Spider-Gwen, said they can't officially create new characters for the series. Now, this goes into my conspiracy theory, and put your tin hats on, people, but seriously, Marvel is having precedent saying don't make things that now Sony could use later on. And he pretty much basically said there's like a big rule that we can't create these new things because we don't officially have the full license of it, or Marvel doesn't. Anything that they create, Sony would get first crack at those characters. What they can do, though, is they could take someone like Luke Cage, and something that they were saying they're thinking on, but it would be Luke Cage, but only a name only, but it could be something totally, it could be a Spider-Man Luke Cage, but because it's Luke Cage, he's, you know, not part of the cast. Other people have stated, well, how come then, you know, in the X-Men books, you know, Brian Bendis, you know, created a bunch of new characters, or, you know, Dan Slott creating characters in Spider-Man and stuff. And it comes down to, they created characters, how much of them are everlasting?
Mm-hmm.
Were they just quick one-shots? Were they just something that was a bad guy for a filler? If you had a really cool-ass like idea, like you came up with a Spawn, or you came up with this character that you knew could branch off, what it's sounding like is, no, those would debut in a different book, debut in Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could throw them into the books, Spider books, all you want, because it's not a property of Spider-Man, which I think all this is asinine. How the lawyering of doing this thing is pretty much being stagnant on creativity for some of these books, all because of where the movie rights are at.
Yep, and it's, I mean, on the one hand, as an industry, that's what's making them the most money. Their comic book sales are still keeping the business going, but it is the movies and then the merchandising of the said movies and properties that is really making them the most money. And so this is, does totally come down to business, and the people that suffer from it are the fans.
Yeah, but farther down the rabbit hole, a big thing is Rodriguez wrote into where we saw this at Bleeding Cool to say, there actually is no rule. The subject wasn't really explained well to me before I was asked the question, and at the time I didn't know. So it's all cleared up now, and once again, no, there is nothing. Mentioned to the podcast that they... you should probably edit it just to clear up any future confusion so it's not out there. We can make whatever we want for Gwen. I was just making assumptions based on what we all read on sites like yours. He says even we read into things that we find out on the net. Bull fucking yeah. shit.
The problem dude. I have with this is once you say it, you can't backpedal.
But they edited that kind the of podcast stuff. To take that part out right. of there. And it's like that you didn't know. No, you said the same thing that a lot of creators have said
yeah.
that we've then been finding out.
There's been enough people of and different people that have said this, and then they've backpedaled. Yeah,
that it's like
so. Maybe there's not an official rule, but maybe there's just this.
No, there's an official rule of don't fucking say the rule to anyone else. Otherwise, we're gonna say
the first rule of Fight Club is
yeah. first rule of trying to
not create new character club.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's where it's like. People can debate if whether it's true or not, but there's just enough evidence to make you have to at least think there possibly is this right. secret rule going on yeah. for different
but
characters.
But I mean, if you think about it, where have the new characters come in, right? There haven't been a ton of new
just in the
mainstream comic book characters coming out, right? The closest one I can think of is when they is in Inhumans.
For sure.
That they actually yeah. had a bunch of new characters, and some right. of which I think will continue on in the Inhumans side of the stories and stuff. But
last thing I just need to mention, because I am really sad by this. Rowdy Piper passed away this past week at the age of 61. Definitely did not, you know, see this one coming. I had gotten the opportunity to actually quick say hi to him a couple months ago at a comic book convention. Severely regret not having secured that interview. We could have if we wanted to. We were just so dead from everything. And I honestly said, you know what? I'll see him at a different convention. We'll hit him up then. Right. So I was able to at least, you know, say, hey, you know, love your work, everything. Like, there's nothing that can get beyond, you know, the movie that is a nerd classic, you know, they live, and how most still people just know him from wrestling, but if you've ever seen that movie, just how...
He's a decent actor, and the fight scene in the alley is still in the world of fight choreography and stunts. That is like a quintessential. You gotta watch.
Well, no, the line, though, fight. I've come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass.
Yeah.
I'm all out of bubblegum. Like, that little... That needs to be on his tombstone. So... sad to hear his passing, but, you know, he will glad be that I was able to meet him at once. And
yeah. He'll be remembered by many fans.
For sure.
So, quick do an Indie Turnpike this week, which I may take a little bit longer than normal, only because the book that I have is bigger than normal.
It's a graphic novel.
Well, it was an it's issue, a book. But yeah. It cost me like $20, and this came out last week. However, it took me about a week to read.
Yeah. That's a single issue?
Yes, but it's a single issue as in half this book here is that issue, and then the other half is like mini stories.
Okay.
This is Fables number 150, Farewell. Also,
volume
22, because it's 130 pages here. That's a lot.
Wow.
And one of the things that I really enjoyed about the series when it's ending is a lot of the books had, at the end of them, a one page or like a couple one pages at the end to tell a story, the final story of so-and-so characters. If you haven't been reading Fables, what you can kind of get from the name is these are, you know, old story type creatures. Snow White, Big Bad Wolf.
It's what ABC's...
Once upon a time should have been,
but they did a really crappy job of doing it. This is immensely better.
Right. Yeah, and I would hope anyone that has read comics, even if they just only read Marvel stuff, would have at least heard of Fables. They've probably heard of Salmon. They've probably heard of Spawn. If they haven't read them, that they've at least heard of Fables. And I tell you right now, if you haven't read Fables, get off your ass and go collect them, because probably one of the best story universes that I've ever seen. And it was kind of sad to put this down. I savored it. I took a couple days to read it, not only because it was so long, but because I didn't want it to end. And each page had a new reveal, and it was closing up like what they've set in these last couple books, because the way that the tone was going in these last, I want to say 10 books, kind of after a year ago when they're saying they're going to end it and everything, really I was like, there's no way that they can fix everything that they've done. There's no way that they can tell every story.
Yeah.
And then when you find out, well, the single issue is like 10 put together, all right, you kind of have a little more leeway to do that.
Well played.
Yes. And as I was saying with some of those last stories, that was another great thing about this book, is we had the main story end, and it ended in a way that was very unexpected. I'm going to do 100% not spoiling this, only because of my love for my brother, who is nowhere near caught up on the series, but he still wants to read this.
Brotherly love.
I'm back on volume like 13, so I'm halfway through the entire...
So nowhere near. Don't even say... this like, is 22,
it's,
Matt.
It's closer than half.
Yeah, I'm over halfway.
Yeah.
Nowhere near the finish line.
All right.
However, a little saddened by it, too, because of... It resolved, and it was awesome, but it was the end, and it made me kind of get a little teary-eyed of, like, that shouldn't have ended like that. It should be, like, 20 more pages telling the story to see deaths. And that was another thing that this book has done well, is there's characters that have been written that, you know, they just all of a sudden die, and they're not coming back.
Yeah.
There's no reason for, well, I mean, there is reason for resurrection, and in the book, too, it's kind of explained with magic and anything can happen, is how big the story is. You could survive a bullet to the face, which some of the characters have throughout the series, but then when you get into magical battles and who dies. Now, I am going to mention the two main people that have worked on this. Because I can't. There's so many people that have worked on this issue. But Bill Willingham, who we had the opportunity to meet at C2E2 and a year ago before, writer and creator, and Mark Buckingham, who's the penciler inker pretty much on the whole series. There's been, you know, some pages that other people had to do, but those two are what Fables is. And it's sad to see it go. The art has always been, you know, spectacular. And just having the same two people work on this book makes each issue just flow so much better than having multiple different artists or having a different writer for here or there. But
when the artists change, you can get a big shift in the tone of the book and stuff like that. And same thing with writers. So yeah, the fact that all 150 issues of Fables were written by the same guy and most of the art done by the same guy is very impressive.
Well, that I also love too what Bill has done is, he created this world, and there's a couple of video games. There's the
Wolf Among Us.
Yeah, there's the Wolf Among Us. There's also like some offshoots. There's Ferris, and then there was Jack of Fables, which was a good series that when that ended, he killed half those, almost all those people as well. Also, his prose books, Peter and Max, was a great story that had nothing to do with Fables, but it did because it followed two of them. But you didn't have to read the comic book. So with these last couple stories that he had within this book, you have a prose, you know, one. It was just a story that he decided to write out. Didn't really need art, but he wanted to fill it with more words and setting that tone, which when you're reading a comic book, you see the visualization. One of the great stories that these last stories follow was of Lake, who ends up marrying one of Bigby and Snow White's kids, and her securing fates for their kids, and how the Lady of the Lake is, you know, one of the stronger fates, her going to these other big ones to get the fates, and then just seeing also of Bigby's kids and their prophecies and how they're meant to be, and how you're still left with Dare being dead in the white void, always worrying, never moving on. A boy Blue, who, for all intents and purposes, he came back once, and when he came back, didn't come back to life, but it was one of those things, comic book death-wise, I mean, Linz, you've not read this, so you probably don't have as emotional appeal to it. that was like one of those big blows. And I feel like as being an adult saying this makes me sound like kind of like a kid.
That's the great thing about comic books is they give you that feeling. You should be allowed to feel like a kid again. When you should be able to allowed to have those emotions and connect to something that's been around for so long. You know?
When he came back, I think it was like issue 140-ish, just for a quick, you know, page. It was like awesome. So to finally see his last story, his heaven, he got a happy ending. That was one of the things, though, that Bill's always said is not all stories truly get happy endings. And so when you're seeing some of these, you're like, okay, that is the last story. That sucks. That's not a happy one, but it sucks. And to end it all on the final of all pages with the giant double barrel last page spread at Wolf Manor and kind of showing all of Bigby's and Snow White's family and how that ended. And it's just, you know, it's about the story. And really, from what that comes, it's just a great ending. What I love most that he said is he could have continued going on. This could have been forever in the writing. But at some point, you know, the story needs to end. Also, there could be spinoffs. There could be other things that go on.
He hasn't done the faux pas of, I will never do this again, ever. And then 10 years from now, he decides, I want to do it. He's just like, I need to be done for it for now. And this is a good ending point, and we'll see what happens.
But as we're saying, you know, he could have done, you know, the things of like King Ambrose, of other things when Fable Town now has a school of magic, how magic now coming in the Mundy world. He could do all of that, but maybe some other artists will continue that on, or some other writer will. Those stories are still there to be told. He set some things, even in these afterthoughts, that are thousands of years in the future. So you got this whole from when Fables ended to that. That could totally be filled in with stories. But he was saying stories aren't told by the credited storytellers alone. It's why he says that he pretty much wrote the complete works of Shakespeare. It's because he's finished each of the plays and the poems and the sonnets and the ditties. By watching them, reading them, and filling in, he's filled in his share of the details. And that's a secret that's never been a secret at all. Stories don't exist until they've been read or viewed or heard and fleshed out within the minds of an audience. And that in of itself is a perfect ending. That was his kind of afterword of the whole series. Goes on to a lot of other nuances and thanking people, but
that's deep.
Yeah.
It's good.
I'll probably do my own podcast speaking of this for like 2 hours. Look it up later, but Fables 150, well worth the price tag. And pick up the series.
You're looking a little teary-eyed and a little sad. It's how I feel every time The Lord of the Rings ends. It's like, I can't watch The Return of the King because I'm like, oh, it's over.
But then it's not because there's another ending.
Yeah, there's another ending. Well, speaking of stories and what needs to be told, booze in a book. This week brought to you by Ink Whiskey. Check them out at inkwhiskey.com. Get some awesome retro flasks and pretty soon some other video game drinking apparel. So,
yes.
We're going to pair Deadpool's Secret Wars, number 3, which came out this week, with a mind eraser. Reason being is that, like the events of Deadpool's Secret Wars, everyone's minds have been erased. They don't remember Deadpool being in the Secret Wars at all. What makes this
issue... Which he secretly was. It's canon.
What is particularly fun about this issue is... it deals with the whole black suit Spider-Man when he finds the symbiote. In the pages of the normal Secret Wars, Thor was talking to, you know, Spider-Man about, or Hulk was, about the costume. You know, there's this machine.
The dumbest machine in the world.
Yeah, it'll fix your costume up for you. And so Spider-Man's like, oh, cool, I need that. And so Deadpool gets in there first, and he bonds with the symbiote momentarily. And he's like, wow, this is really cool. And then he sees it changing all the different costumes that it can do because it responds to his thoughts. And then when Deadpool realizes that it's following his thoughts, he goes, I can feel it like a living thing in my head, feeding on my own thoughts. Well, that's just not fair to a sentient life form. Jeez, and he gets it off him. He goes, I hope communicating with the brain doesn't mess this thing up, which we know It was quite obsessive and weird. So read Deadpool's Secret Wars and pour yourself a mind eraser, which is 2 ounces of vodka, 2 ounces of Kahlua. There's where we get the black liqueur in there, and 2 ounces of tonic water. Serve in an old-fashioned glass and enjoy.
Nice.
So,
any last calls from you peoples?
I have so many books this week, you guys. Seriously, I haven't even read all of them yet. But the ones I did read, I had Sabrina.
Oh, so fucking good.
Number 4. It was so... It was really good. If you guys aren't reading this, you should. X-Men 92. You know...
I like the cover...
Yeah, the cover is the throwback to the Gambit and Rogue embracing cover. This book is fun. It totally, Derek talked about this a little bit when the first issue came out. It totally makes you think of the animated series. You hear the song, you hear their voices. It's great. It's so great. I wish that this wasn't a Secret Wars Battle World book. I wish they would just keep going with it. Yeah.
Boy, X-Men were the coolest.
It's true. Justice League, Gods and Monsters, the Superman one. Very good. Goes into his backstory. Super interesting. God Hates Astronauts, number 10. And Gem, number 5.
Yeah, you know, normally what we do at this part is we don't list them all because you may have listed 5 of them that I picked up. And then I can't
those
even
aren't
get my
even,
thoughts.
Those well, aren't even all of them.
Well, maybe you should have jumped in a little
bit. Those aren't even all of them. I have more. So.
Holy fuck.
Really? I told you it was a huge week for me. That was half of my... This was only half of my books.
All I've really got to share is 1602, Witch Hunter Angela, Part 2, featuring Ye Old Guardians of the Galaxy.
Nah.
real fun, you know, take on those characters. And, I'm enjoying it quite a bit as a Battle World spinoff.
Right on.
Ninjak number 5, getting back into my Valiant stuff. And Thor's number 2, and then almost half of the books that you guys mentioned. So what I had this week.
Awesome.
So yeah, with that, I think it's time to wrap up.
As I need to curl into a ball in the corner and sleep.
It is, God, we're going to be old on comics. It's nap time, guys. Got to get my Metamucil and...
I'm going to need my bifocals to check out this page.
Well, until next week, we will be here reading the comic books and drinking some booze and coming back with some recommendations for you.